for example, careless wheat farmer exporting topsoil, the source of the fire.
Well, that's what goes on around here.
Well, wait, how does exporting topsoil result in a devastating fire?
Well, you got this mindset that you have to do the harvesting today, right now, no matter what. And no matter what, have the day of the fire, July the 20th, 2015, the National Weather Service had issued a high fire danger, red flag alert. It's 95 degrees temperature in the air. The ground is 105 degrees, wind gusting to 30 miles an hour, high fire danger. Practically every wheat farmer in this county was out harvesting. The careless farmers who started this fire are both firemen. One of them, an employed fireman of the city of Walla Walla. The other one, a volunteer fireman out in our neighborhood.
Do they have any liability in this?
Hard to tell. They've been sued in Superior Court in Walla Walla County for negligence. And they're probably going to have to settle with me and a half dozen other people.
And your land, your house was fine.
Yes, my house and the 5 acres around it weren't burned, but the other 1,000 acres were toasted.
So you were essentially, as I recall, having visited that land, using it as a way to rewild your horses, if I can put it that way.
I was indeed. My horses, there's still grass out there. It was a place for my horses to live. But one of the things that's not possible to replace is the great feelings I had about, I used to take you and Amalia and my other friends out there, show you the waterfalls, climb around the mountains, take pictures of wildflowers. I lived there. I would go out there every day. Now I can't stand to be out there.
Right, because it's a war zone.
Well, I can show you pictures.
You dedicated the poem to Amalio Madueño. So yeah. Tell us why you did that and about your friendship with him.
Well, Amalio is probably he's certainly the best underappreciated poet in this country. I can say that without fear of contradiction. Ex cathedra, Amalio Madueño is a great poet. And he should have many, many books distributed in all kinds of manners. Instead, he has to crank them out more or less by himself there at Rancho de Taos. And that's not a bad idea in many ways, because if you're publishing your own books, you're in control of the process. I spent some really wonderful conversations with a New Yorker named Jules Siegel, nephew of Bugsy Siegel. He's on the lam, more or less, in Mexico, trying to wrangle an interview with Miguel de la Madrid, who was the president of Mexico for Playboy. And we're talking shop. You know, he's a New York writer, publisher, author, and I'm whoever I am. And he has a copy of Alga Cruz, and he's just crazy about it, because you have, all this editorial and artistic freedom. You just did what you wanted to do. He said, that's so great. And I said, yeah, but it was a hand job that we did. And I set the goddamn type in Crowther's basement. I said, what about having a publisher and actual distribution and good production like you guys get in New York? He was envying me. I was envying him, because we were in these two disparate ways in which the literary world is divided.
So Amalio.
Amalio, yeah. But he is just a super, super intelligent, musical, sensitive individual. I met him, and he's very much a. It's probably his one of the reasons he's probably such a good poet, and one of the reasons why he's probably not as widely published as he ought to be. He's kind of a backgrounder person. I had no idea how important he was when I went to the Taos Poetry Circus, which was a year after my first heart attack, because I thought, I wish I'm going to go down there. I better go down there before it's too late, And he was just, I don't know how the Taos Poetry Circus was put together, but I get the impression that he was pretty much the engine room.
For about 10 years.
Yeah, that he was running it for Peter Rabbit, who was, thought of himself as the Don King of poetry, and I'm not a big fan of those kind of that competition. I saw the one where Wanda Coleman lost to Sherman Alexie, and that was You know, I mean, the judges, it was poorly judged.
And it was a production. It was a show.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like entertainment of a sort. And I don't mind that poetry turns into entertainment at one level, because they had big crowds. I mean, I have to admit, they had some of the largest crowds. It was probably one of the most important series of readings that ever took place on this continent. And and the guy who started it, I don't know, do you know...
Al Simmons. Simmons? Yeah, I know of him. I've never met him.
I've got a really great book of his poems up here, and he's a great writer himself. Yeah. And he kind of started that stuff in Chicago.
Right. Mark Smith sort of took his method and turned it into the slam.
Right.
Which has its own story.
Amalia, with being reticent, you know, I mean, he's not a showboater. You've been around him a lot, you know. I mean, understated, underspoken, you know, soft-spoken, thoughtful.
And perceptive.
Considerate.
Incredibly perceptive.
He understands everything going on around him, I'm pretty sure of all that. You know, and I enjoyed his presence and his poetry, and I reprinted a lot of it, published it in the Temple magazine when I was doing it, you know, would do it again, you know. He and, of the great poets that I discovered after I was publishing that magazine when I met him.
The Temple.
Suzanne Lummis from L.A., both Amalia and Suzanne are two of my favorite poets. They're two really great poets. But Suzanne has a much wider impact on the world than Amalia does. But she's kind of confined to California, too. I mean, she's so much fucking better than all of those women and men from the East Coast that it's disgusting.
The next poem is Coyote Whitetail War, the next poem I'd like you to read.
The Coyote Whitetail War.
And I think that reading the poems gives us the background for understanding the deeper picture, which will emerge after you read and after I ask you a question about that. But
okay.
Coyote Whitetail War. I would tell you what page, but you send me a proof, so I don't have the pages in it.
I sent you the real book.
Are there no page numbers?
Yeah. I put page numbers on them.
So I can tell you what pages are.
Who cares what pages are?
Reduce the dead air.
We did have a table of contents. Anyway, Coyote Whitetail War. Let's imagine one side never completely wins. Taking sides rends my being. How anyone could have ever described this nature as a balance. Juggling from a great height, the appealing solo participants, both sides lose way more than enough to vulcanize artificial rubber. The fast chew of the fawn jaws adumbrate the rest of their speed. The cruel chew of the coyote's teeth, making peace is never going to happen.
So, you know, I look at your facial expression when you read that first couplet, let's imagine one side never completely wins. You're not asking us to imagine this. This is the way you see it as happening. It's very obvious.
Okay.
Just the look on your face is like, come on, people. This is what's happening. And, but I look at this, and the last poem, let's face it, it's all going to burn. Those are the two things. There's a nihilistic undertone to all of this.
I don't think nihilistic is... I mean, I don't mind being called... But I think there's a realistic tone to it.
Realistic.
I am a realist.
You're a glass half empty kind of guy.
Well, it's not half empty. The glass is, you know, it's empty, it's full, it's broken, it's not even there. You can't get a drink, you know. You're going to die of thirst. You know, it's whatever. It's...
says the man who's had three heart attacks and watched 1,000 Acres burn.
There's a lot going on there. I mean, the little successes that individual actors, a fawn, a coyote, you, me, our children, the little successes we have are all on a pathway to personal oblivion. Not to the whole system. I kind of admire natural history in a big way. And cultural history, that is to say the people part of it, is pretty much irrelevant to what the Earth is doing. You know, the Earth has no more interest in us than nothing. You know, I mean,
And we have very little interest in what's happening with the earth.
Well, we separate, you know, I don't know. The book never got as much attention as I wish it had. I published
this book.
No, a book I wrote called Nature Lovers. It's a satire on nature lovers in a sense, you know, and there's an afterword in there in which it's a pay on to Wordsworth's ode on the intimations of immortality. And what I think Wordsworth was getting at there is there was a time when bird, beast, and flower seemed apparelled in celestial delight. Says, nothing can bring back that hour of splendor in the grass, of glory in the flower. The way we used to feel about things as children, when it was all very delightful and beautiful, and our parents took their cues and were lying to us about how great it all is. That's really not about personal development. I think that's about, there's no way to bring back that hour. Once upon a time, before we became chimpanzees with a gene for speech, we were part of natural history. We're no longer part of natural history. Language has separated us from natural history. We're cultural history now. And that's, I think that insight, I attribute it to Wordsworth, really matters.
And the cultural history is one that's no longer necessary to be even connected to land anymore. Connected to a place.
Well, it is, you know, it's kind of like these guys exporting topsoil. You know, I mean, you would think if you were really trying to nurture a place that would last for a long time, that you'd protect your topsoil.
You'd be building the soil.
We have a lot of topsoil here to squander, which is an odd set of relationships. I mean, in this part of Washington, the Central Basin of Washington, because the Missoula floods washed all of that silt down here, and then the wind blew it all up on these hills. They look, if from the sky, they look like sand dunes, and they're in fact dunes of soil.
So when I read in a poem about the Newcomb Vivarium, this nurse log, that this topsoil took 500 years to create and maybe 100 years to fuck up forever, I can hear why you're laughing now, because you're seeing it happening here.
Yeah, oh yeah. And it's so deep here that they have a lot to squander, but you know, they have a lot of other problems too.